Welcome to the Fire Podcast, a show dedicated to interviewing those who are fearless, inspiring, resilient, and engaging. Stories told on this show are incredible examples of overcoming adversity and facing life's challenges. Thank you for joining us. Hello, and welcome to the Fire Podcast. I am your host, Quentin Williams, and I am super excited to be welcoming you into a brand new year. So welcome to 2021. I hope you guys are as excited about this year as I am, and I'm super excited to be bringing you guys such great content. So thank you for tuning in week after week. I really appreciate your support. Now, this week's episode is very interesting. I met and interviewed Desiree Turner, who was shot and left for dead in Cache Valley, Utah. Desiree has since recovered, and despite everything that she's gone through, is working on some incredibly cool projects, and I'm excited for you guys to hear this story and learn more about what Des is up to. So it was a joy and honor for me to interview her. And like I said, despite her having a traumatic brain injury and having to work with all kinds of different specialists and so forth, she really has taken the positive road on this. And I appreciate her perspective, and it was a lot of fun to interview her. So can't wait for you guys to check out this episode. Now, if you guys want to support the show, and if you find value in the show, I invite you to head over to buymeacoffee.com/thefirepodcast, where you can donate. Now, one thing that I've set up this year is you guys can actually purchase a membership, which donates on a monthly basis. And these donations go to helping me pay for podcast hosting fees and equipment and other things that make it possible for me to bring you this content. So your donations are much appreciated, and I thank you for considering to donate. It really does help. If you want to keep up with us on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @_firepodcast and on facebook.com/thefirepodcast. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoy this episode with Desiree Turner. Hello, Desiree. I want to thank you for coming on the Fire Podcast.
Hello, and you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm excited to share with the listeners your story and talk about some of the challenges you face, but some of the things that you've been able to learn through this experience. And I'm just excited to get your story out there even more than it already is. So,
well, I like sharing my story, so this should be fun.
Awesome. So the first thing I want to do is just get into what life was like for you before the incident and talk about some of your hopes and dreams and just some of the things that you were into that, you know, you might not be able to do as much now or that have definitely changed. So just walk us through what life looked like before the incident.
Well, looking back now, I had a pretty dang good life. I was a competitive equestrian. So I rode horses. I did that very competitively. It was one of my passions. I did karate and kickboxing also. So I liked to be active and having fun. I was also in band for a little bit. So I knew how to play some instruments.
That's awesome. What was your favorite instrument?
I like the saxophone, although I was never really good at playing it.
Did you play in any jazz bands, or did you just perform at school, or what did you participate in with the saxophone?
I played a little bit in jazz band, but I really wasn't all that good at it, so I just mainly stuck to band and played my flute in band.
Gotcha. Well, that's great. Talk to us more about the equestrian thing. Where did you ride and what kind of things did you do with that?
So I live on a big portion of land, and so my horses are all in the backyard. And my dad and my mom grew up riding horses, so we just have always had horses. I probably was riding horses before I could walk. And it just kind of started from a young age. When I started competing when I was 8 years old, and I competed every year at the Cache County 4-H program, which led me to some state horse shows. The year before I was shot, I took third in the state with my 3-year-old horse.
That's awesome. What's your horse's name?
My horse's name is Junior.
Okay. And what breed or what type of horse is Junior?
He's a quarter horse, a sorrel color quarter horse.
Awesome. And do you still have Junior today?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Have you been able to get back up on Junior since the incident?
I have rode. It's a lot more difficult and it's a lot more frustrating, so I don't do it that often as I would like.
Yeah, I bet.
And it triggers a lot of headaches.
Because of the jostling and so forth?
Yes.
I see. Wow, well, that's awesome that you were able to participate in those events and that you placed third. That's really cool. So can you talk to us about the days and weeks leading up to the shooting? And did you notice anything from your friends that may have suggested that this would happen? Or can you just talk to us a little bit about sort of the days leading up to the incident?
It was just, I didn't really notice anything that would really give me any red flags. So I didn't know. I had no clue that he was gonna try to kill me. He was just the same usual person. And when he asked if I wanted to hang out, I was like, okay, sure. We had done it before, so why not?
Right, because he was a friend of yours, right?
He was.
I wonder what caused him to want to make a decision that would change his life forever like that.
I have no idea what was going through his mind. But after the fact, I had lots of people come up to me and say, like, oh yeah, he mentioned something about wanting to do a school shooting. I'm like, oh yeah, he would always carry a knife around with him and threaten to cut you or shoot you.
Wow, so he was talking about that stuff and no one thought that they should mention that to you?
Exactly. Or even to the authorities. I don't know why they didn't go to someone. But after the fact, they started to come up with these. Oh yeah, he was probably on the dangerous side.
Gosh, that must have been frustrating to hear that coming from friends and those that you knew and have them not say anything.
Yeah. I just want to tell people that if you know of these things, speak up.
Yeah, for sure. So the night that it happened, he invited you to come hang out, which you said you had done a number of times, right?
Not necessarily a number of times, but we had done it before, so yeah, I didn't really think much of it.
And so was it in the evening after school that he wanted to hang out and meet up with you, or what time of day was it?
Yeah, just right after school, around 3:30-ish. It was the holiday weekend, so I asked Mom, I was like, hey Mom, can I hang out after school? I'll ride the bus home with them, and I'll be home in time to feed the horses, like my usual daily chores. And of course, Mom was like, okay, it's a holiday weekend, sure, you can go have some fun. None of us had any bad feelings about it.
Really? So do you remember anything happening during the time that you were hanging out that kind of made you feel nervous or not really?
One thing that did catch me off guard is that his best friend, Jason, who I knew didn't really like me all that much, showed up at the spot that we were hanging out. And me being 14 at the time and then being with two 16-year-old guys, I was just thinking, okay, he doesn't want to be alone with me. That's why the third person's here. That's cool. But it never really, that was the only thing that caught me off guard, but I made up that excuse that he doesn't want to be alone with me. So third person's there. That's totally fine.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how long were you guys together before they actually assaulted you?
I don't know. It was probably an hour and a half or so or whatever. And I saw the time and I knew that I had to start going home because I had to go feed the horses. And so it was about 4:30 when I turned to walk away and that was the end of it.
Wow. And what was the first thing you remember after coming to, and how long were you out for initially?
I don't really know exactly how long I was out for, but I do remember that when I woke up, my dad was right there next to me, and he said, in the hospital, he said, "Des, don't be scared, but you're in the hospital. You've been shot, but you're okay."
Wow, and you don't remember how long it was before that instance?
I don't exactly know.
Okay.
Mom says that it was days later. I know that I was in my coma for about 12 days. So I don't know if it was right after that or a couple days after the coma when I was really waking up.
And was that a medically induced coma, or did you just go into that naturally?
I think it was a medically induced coma.
Probably trying to protect the brain and so forth.
Yeah, and I was hooked up to a breathing machine that was breathing for me.
Wow, so a lot of the body's systems had already started to shut down then.
Yes, something that I do remember, because it was excruciating pain, I hated it so much, is that my left lung had collapsed. And so they were putting that face compression on my face, trying to pump air into my body. Oh, it was the most painful thing I've ever felt.
Wow, it's hard to even imagine what pain that might have been causing you.
The reason I think it hurt so bad is that I had already gone through the surgery where they had taken out a portion of my skull to allow my brain to swell and not cause more damage. And so having those compressions on my face and chest, I didn't have any skull to protect my brain, so my brain was getting squished and pushed on. It hurts so bad.
I bet, and that's such a sensitive part. You know, there's so many neurons and things there that I'm sure that any little pressure would have caused excruciating pain, let alone what they were having to do to you. That's, wow.
Yep, I remember fighting so bad. I would kick the nurses, I would rip off the ventilator, and my family around me would be like, "Des, calm down, you need this." But I was also so confused. I mean, I was dying, and I didn't know what was going on.
Right, you weren't in your right mind,
I wasn't in my right mind.
You didn't know how to respond, I would imagine.
Yeah, I have also been, So I have other marks on my body, scars from when I was waking up in that part, in that time frame, and I was just so confused and in so much pain that I was just ripping anything and everything that was attached to my body off, because I didn't understand that it was helping me. All I knew is that there was pain there. If I want to get rid of it, just rip it off. So I ripped off a bunch of IVs, leads. I even ripped off the brain drain in my head that was pumping fluid out of my brain.
Really?
Yeah. They had to tie me down because I wouldn't just stop biting. That made me mad.
Oh, I bet. And that's something that you couldn't get rid of. So that restrained you even more.
Yep, I remember wearing a glove over my one hand. So with the shooting, it paralyzed half of my body. And so my left hand didn't work, so they didn't have to worry about that hand much. But they gloved my right hand and tied it down. So the only functioning part of my body was tied down. I was so mad.
Yeah, that would be infuriating for sure. How long were you dealing with this in the hospital?
I spent 63 days in the hospital.
Wow.
I wasn't confused the whole time, but at the beginning I was super confused and just trying to figure out life. I do remember a tech that spent the entire night with me holding my hand just to make sure I wouldn't pull anything out. She was such a sweetheart. I still see her every now and then when I have to make trips back to the hospital.
That's neat that you had someone to sit with you and kind of provide some comfort, you know?
Yes. She was a big comfort to me and to my mom, who could have finally gotten some sleep without having to worry about me pulling out whatever tube that was connected to me.
Absolutely. And were you seen in a hospital in Cache Valley, or were you transported to Salt Lake?
So, yes, I was immediately after the ambulance took me. After the ambulance found me, they took me to Cache Valley Specialty Hospital, where I had a CT scan, and then I was life-flighted to Primary Children's.
Okay, so most of your care was at Primaries then?
Yes.
Wow. So how has this shooting affected not only you, but your family as well?
I think it's affected everyone around me, my neighbors, my family, my relatives, my friends.
Has it made you feel more vulnerable?
At times, I think, it's hard to deal with someone knowing the fact that I was shot and knowing that someone I went to school with did this to me, and kind of makes me nervous about who I'm around.
Yeah, because when you're with friends who you think you can trust and then they take advantage and make these kinds of decisions, you don't know who you can trust anymore.
Exactly.
So besides the hospitalization and all the doctor's visits, what has your recovery looked like?
Well, I've had 18, 19 surgeries because of the shooting. They're all to help me get better. I've had 13 brain surgeries and other surgeries to help my body through the shooting. It's hard.
Oh, I can only imagine. Did they have to do a lot of reconstructive surgery?
Nope, not really reconstructive. Most of it's from my BP shunt that keeps me alive.
Okay.
So a shunt is a medical device in my brain that takes the extra fluid that my brain can no longer process and transports it to a different part of my body through a little tube. And it's really old technology. I think it was made in the 1950s. And they fail a lot and they get clogged a lot. And so they just need a lot of maintenance, which requires surgery.
I see. So that shunt goes from your brain down to your stomach. Is that how it works?
Yes. But recently in June, I had a really bad infection in that shunt. And so it no longer goes into my abdomen cavity. It now goes into my heart.
Oh, really? And so with these shunts getting clogged and stuff, do you experience pain when that happens, or do you really not notice?
They cause really bad headaches. And the weather and the moon can also affect these shunts because of the barometric pressure. So it's a tough thing to live with. Of course, I have to live with it because it keeps me alive.
Is there ever talk about maybe getting it out, or is that something you'll need the rest of your life?
I've tried to live without it, or go without it. I don't last very long without it. And so I'm probably going to have to live with it for the rest of my life.
I see. So I know it's very difficult, but I'm curious to know what some lessons are that you and your family have learned through this experience.
I think we've learned that we can do hard things is one that we've learned through this lesson. And when life takes a turn, you just kind of got to go with it.
Yeah, we're not left with much of a choice, are we?
Yeah, that one's been hard for me. I don't like that my life has been flipped upside down. It was a really hard change, and it gave me some depression.
Yeah, I was curious about that, and how do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
I gotta just keep my life full of things that make me happy. I have a service dog that I love dearly, and he was my main help for getting me out of the big depression right after the shooting.
How long after the shooting did you receive that service animal?
6 months.
So it was about 6 months then?
Probably about 6 months. Maybe more, maybe less. I'm not quite sure.
Gotcha. And who was it that recommended a service animal for you?
So actually at primaries, they randomly have service animals come into the hospital, therapy dogs, and horses and dogs have always been my love. And so seeing the dogs there, they just brightened up my day and I loved it so much. And then when we got home, I was like, Mom, can I please get a dog? He'll be my service dog. I'll train him. I'll take care of him. Please, can I get a dog? And I somehow got my parents to cave and they got me a dog.
That's awesome. So I actually had a service dog for a while as well, and she helped guide me around and was an awesome companion. So I know how helpful those animals can be. That's really neat.
Yes. The main functions that my dog does for me is he's good at helping me with my seizures. He's really much like a comfort dog. I do have some vision loss, so he does help me around with my vision a little bit. But I think his main thing is my comfort seizures, for my seizures. And he has some training in mobility work, so he can help me get off the floor if I fall or something. But I don't really fall, I just get on the floor a lot, and he can help me get back up.
Well, that's great. So when you talk about seizures and some of these other things that you've had to deal with, what's been the hardest, and then what's been the most helpful thing to get you through that?
Learning that, so my seizures are different than the regular kind. Mine are called non-epileptic seizures, which basically means that my body will mimic a seizure when it's under too much stress, which can be I'm too tired, I'm too cold, I'm too emotional, either happy or sad, which is one that really is hard to deal with. It took me a while to accept that one, because for a while I'm like, dang it, now I can't even be happy without going into a seizure. And so that one was pretty hard to deal with.
I bet. What all of your functions did this affect? So I know you said you have the seizures and you have some paralyzation in your hand and leg and things. What else did it affect?
So my big things that I would say is that it paralyzed the left side of my body, which many people don't realize this, but it also includes the internal organs as well as the appendages, as your arm and leg and that. And so I had to relearn how to eat, which was hard.
Did you choke a lot at first?
Yes, and I still occasionally choke or aspirate on my water or liquids. And so I still have to be careful about what I eat and how dry or how soft it is.
Does someone have to be with you all the time, or do you have time to be on your own and that kind of thing?
I just have to be careful what I'm doing. Like, I know that it's not exactly safe for me to be eating while nobody's around me. But I can be alone as well, as long as I'm careful and smart with what I do.
Right.
I do have... This is what confuses a lot of people. So in the medical terms, it's called hemianopsia hemianopsia, which means half of my vision is cut off. So it's also confusing. So my eyes can see perfectly fine, but the information just doesn't get back to my brain. And so I do have a blind spot on the left side of my eyes, on both of my eyes, which is what confuses people. And so I have about 42% vision.
Do your eyes play tricks on you?
Yes. My eyes like to bounce a lot, and I can get dizzy pretty quickly.
And is that what leads to you ending up on the floor, like you mentioned before?
It can be. I don't really fall all that much, but I like to get on the floor so to do more therapies or to play with my puppy.
So the dog is definitely a big part of your life.
Yes.
So I want to segue a little bit and talk about the prosecution of those who attacked you and how that was, being so new with the injury and so forth. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So with that, I am lucky that the court didn't take 2 years to prosecute them. It only took the year, which is kind of lucky in a way. But it was still emotional being so fresh out of from the injury and having to see my attackers in court.
Yeah, I bet that was just like reopening the wound over and over.
It threw some salt in the wound for sure.
Yeah, I bet. So what's the main thing that you'd like people to understand about your situation?
There's a lot of things that you can take away from this. After the shooting, a lot of my friends didn't know how to approach me or talk to me anymore. And so I lost a lot of friends because they just simply didn't know how to be around me anymore. And so, like, I just want to let people know that people with disabilities, we're just the same as anybody else.
I love that message so much, because being a man who's lived with a disability for 36 years, it is hard, you know, and we have a lot of different trials and things that we deal with. The last thing we want to deal with is social challenges. You know, we want to participate in activities and talk to others and have friends just like anybody else.
Yes, and I am really open and willing to teach people about my disabilities. And so, like, I understand how people can be, like, hesitant and, like, see, like, it could be offensive asking, oh, what's wrong with your hand? Why isn't it moving? Why is it in a fist? But I'm, like, I'll talk about how it's, why it's paralyzed and the medical science behind it. Of course, they probably don't understand it, but I'm willing to share what's wrong with me, and I don't find it offensive. Like I said, I like sharing my story.
Yeah, I think that's great. So you're approaching the 4-year anniversary, is that right?
Yes, February will be the 4th-year anniversary.
Wow, what does that feel like for you?
I can't believe it's been so long. It feels like yesterday.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That is probably very fresh in your mind at all times.
Yes. There are times where, in my dreams, I relive the shooting, and I have to, when I wake up, I have to ground myself, realize that I'm just in my bed, just in my room. The shooting was a long time ago.
What other kinds of things do you think about on a regular basis as far as the situation that you're in and how you're doing and that kind of thing?
I'm looking into college, and there's a school right here in Logan called Utah State University that I'm looking into going to, and they have a really good program for people with disabilities, and they can live up on campus and learn how to live on their own with their disabilities. And so I'm looking into that, and I'm realizing that I wonder how life's going to be if I can't get my hand working by the time I go to college.
Are you right or left-handed?
I'm right-handed, which has been a blessing because I've always been right-handed, and my left hand is paralyzed.
What kind of program do you want to get into at Utah State?
There's the Aggies Elevate is the program of people with disabilities can take to live up on campus and learn how to be on their own. But what I want to study is horticulture or floriculture or botany, whatever you want to call it.
So you're big into plants and agriculture and such?
Yes. Something that me and my mom have gotten into because of the shooting is plants. And I've really just taken off on it.
What is it about plants that you're interested in?
They're so different and so unique, but each one of them are beautiful, which is just like humans. We're so different, we're so unique, but everyone's beautiful in their own way.
I love that. There's a lot of parallels that we can draw between plants and humans, isn't there?
Yes. And it's good therapy for me. I've always been a farm kid. I've always been playing in the dirt. And so getting my hands back in the dirt and the soil planting is just really awesome to me. And it gives me something else to think about other than my pain, my disabilities, headaches.
What other types of things do you look forward to?
Actually, my mom and I are trying to create a flower farm. And so this spring will be our first year opening to the public for our flower farm. And it's going to be a you pick flower farm. So similar to like you pick apples, you pick peaches. But of course, ours is flowers.
Oh, that's really cool. So you're going to launch that next year then?
Yes, it should be open spring of 2021.
That's great. And are you guys doing that right on your property then?
Yes, actually the arena that I used to ride horses in for several years, we are changing that into our flower farm.
And does that make you sad or happy?
A little bit of both. Like that arena, I've used it for countless years on end as my happy place, as my place to go ride my horse and forget about life. And so now I get to go out and play with flowers and forget about life.
Well, I think what's tremendous is you're looking for opportunities and looking for things that you're passionate about to help you kind of escape. And I think that's an awesome message to be sharing with people is, you know, despite whatever you're going through, there's still things that you can find joy in and find happiness in. And I just think that's awesome.
Yes, that is another message I'd like to share is that do what makes you happy, find the things that make you happy and stick with it. And create your own happiness, create your own joy.
Yeah, I echo that. That's awesome. So I know earlier you said you've had about 18, 19 surgeries. Are you having to work with specialists monthly or yearly, or what does the doctor thing look like now?
So I see my neurologist about every 3 months, and I see my neurosurgeon every time I have a problem with my shunt, which fluctuates between months to years to most often months. And really, we just take it by ear with whatever doctor we need to see at the time. And we do a lot of therapies. I do therapy every day. I do acupuncture, chiropractor, a lot of physical therapy, some mental therapy.
with the pandemic and that, has that changed your schedule or changed what you're doing, or are you still able to kind of do what you need to do?
Both, kind, I guess.
Yeah, kind of like all of us, right?
Yeah.
I know you said that in another interview you did that the pandemic has kind of flipped everybody's world upside down, but ultimately, I mean, it's nothing like what you've gone through.
Yes, well, like, yes, I can see that everybody's world has been flipped upside down, and we're all struggling through this pandemic. And that's one thing I've kind of liked about this pandemic, is that it has put people on live a day-by-day basis, which has been my life for the past almost 4 years. And so I just hope that people are more understanding to each other, that, like, we're all struggling. We all don't know what the future's going to bring.
Yeah, I think if anything, we need to just try and have more compassion for those around us.
Agreed. Everybody is going through a hard thing.
That we are. What are some of the other difficult things that you face on a regular basis because of this incident?
Pain. Pain is something I deal with every day.
And is there anything that they can do for you to minimize the pain, or not really?
Well, I've had surgeries that have been like nerve block surgeries, and they help for a while, but it's just my life. I have foreign objects in my brain, and my body does not like it at all.
Yeah, I bet it's trying to reject those because it doesn't understand what it's doing, right?
Yes, I have had all, my body hates having foreign objects in it. It's rejected everything up to staples, stitches, even the shunt tube that was in my body. It's rejected some bullet fragments. For a second, I thought it was going to reject my own skull when they took out my skull and then had to put it back in. I thought my body was going to reject it.
Yeah, that would be interesting because, you know, even though it was part of your body, it was taken out for quite a while. So when they reintroduced it, that's a interesting thought.
Yep, it does happen to some people, I know.
Really?
Yep.
That's fascinating.
And then they get metal plates to be their skull.
Right. Well, this has been awesome. Do you have any final thoughts or messages that you'd like to share with the audience?
Keep your head up. You can go through hard things. Everybody's going through something. Have compassion. We can do it together.
Absolutely. If people want to keep up with the projects you're working on or some of the different efforts you're involved with, where can they go to find out more about you?
I have a Facebook and an Instagram page. They are both called Praying for Desiree Turner. I try to update those often.
Well, that's fantastic. Desiree, thank you again so much for being willing to come on and share your story. And I'm really excited to have had this opportunity to meet with you and learn a little bit more about you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You are so welcome.
You've been listening to the Fire Podcast, where we share inspirational stories and interviews. If you've enjoyed this content, we invite you to share it with those who you think might benefit. Thank you, and stay tuned for more incredible content.